Wait, that's it?
Yes. Great. It's a great hot new track. All right, let's start the show.
Welcome to the 99% podcast.
You're Michael McAndrew.
And you're Lucien Moi Daly.
Yes, I am.
This is the podcast for the rest of us. The podcast, I guess we talk about everything and anything. Talk about politics, talk about culture, talk about current affairs.
We like to pretend that we talk about sport, even though we never, ever, ever do.
You always say we talk about sport. I don't think we ever talked about sport.
I think we did
podcast.
The Women's World Cup on episode two. We briefly discussed it.
Oh, we might have, yeah.
But that was almost a political story rather than a sports one because it was about the Women's World Cup. For the first time ever, we're broadcasting the show, recording live on Periscope. And people there are going to be hopefully sending us some questions that we'll answer on the stream and on the show. So this could make for a very interesting first few minutes.
This could be interesting.
We'll probably shut it down. Okay, are we American? No, we are Irish.
We're Irish.
Hi from Puerto
from
Rico.
From Ireland.
Someone says hi from Puerto Rico. I say hello to you.
Hello, Puerto Rico.
Hello
person.
From Ireland. So send us your questions and we will answer them and it should make it for an interesting episode of the 99%.
Yeah. I guess we should kind of start with the announcement about the future of the show.
So we've been going strong for the last, well, for 8 weeks now. We skipped last week. Mm-hmm. Someone says, where is Conor McGregor? I don't see him.
We have him back here.
Connor,
where are you, Connor?
I mean, he's stuck.
Connor, come out, would you, bye?
He's stuck in the back room right now, but if we can get him out in a while, we'll show him to you. So, I've been doing the show for 8 weeks now, and it's been going very, very well. And as a result, we're going to...
we're going to end the show.
We're going to end the show, so...
No, we're finishing season one.
We're going to go on a little hiatus.
Next week will be our last show.
Last show of season one.
Of season one, and then we'll be back next year with season two.
And when we're back next year, we'll probably be back for the long term.
Probably.
But frankly, the next 9 or 10 months is a very busy time for both of us in terms of our full-time education.
Yeah.
So podcasting is...
And saying that, oh, we're just finishing season one makes it sound so much cooler.
It
so
does,
that's
yeah.
basically why we're yeah. saying that.
We've got a great debate going on in the comments of the Periscope right now about our accents, particularly mine.
Okay.
Some people saying I sound American. Some people saying I sound Irish. I'd like to clarify, I am an Irishman.
You kind of have that little bit of American influence, though.
Definitely. And, I've been listening to American radio, twang. American TV my entire life, and this has clearly affected my voice.
Most people would say I sound really American, though. I don't.
Yes.
I kind of do.
We all do. Everyone. All do.
Everybody in the whole world
everyone
sounds American
in,
these days.
Especially in Ireland, where we are just listening to a lot of American stuff. Somebody says, I think we both sound Irish. Okay.
Cool.
You're entitled to your opinion, so.
we're not going to.
We have hello from Atlantic City. Hello from Mexico. We're up to 16 viewers now.
Mm.
Which is more viewers than we've ever had listeners on an episode of the 99%.
This is not true.
Hello from Turkey. Okay, so that is the announcement about the future of the show. So next week is our season finale.
Episode 8. It's an 8-episode season.
And you'll be able to listen back to all 8 episodes throughout the year if you're ever missing us. And
you want to hear our voices again.
We have all those great interviews backed up in the archive.
Subtle tones of Lucien's voice.
Yes, be it American or... Irish. Someone says he's a huge Conor McGregor fan and he would like us to talk about Conor McGregor. That's not going to happen because that's sports and we don't do sports on the show.
Oh, we do though. Conor McGregor is an absolute legend.
Okay. Someone asked if we were in Galway or Dublin because the location on the Periscope keeps changing. We're in Galway.
Really? We're in Galway. Yeah.
Yeah, that's where 99% World Headquarters is currently located. So we've got an exciting show for you today. Coming up, we have an interview with Harry McCann, who is one of the leading youth entrepreneurs here in Ireland. He has got the Digital Youth Council. He's got a company called Kid Tech, and he's organizing a conference, which is taking place in Belfast next February. We'll be discussing all these things. He's also this week's proprietor of the @Ireland Twitter handle, which is very exciting for him and for everybody. So,
we interviewed him just a bit earlier on, but we're going to play the interview later.
We'll play
on
the interview episode, but, later on, so you can look forward to that.
It was a really interesting interview. I thoroughly enjoyed talking to Harry. I think I met him last year, for the first time at the Excited conference. So, interesting guy to talk to.
You should all stick around.
He's got a lot
and,
to say.
Hear what he has to say.
Absolutely.
So, Michael, I see you got some new office space this week.
Not really. Well, there's a bit of a story behind it. I needed somewhere to sleep, somewhere to work, and I got a loan of 4,000 square feet worth of office space.
So you're officially a king.
I'm officially one guy using
an office that would fit 200 people.
Not quite 200 people, but like a lot of people, probably 50 people. You could probably fit 50 people in there.
Probably.
It was great. And, you know, it's great when you come across people who are just really, really kind.
Mm.
And they'll do, if you ask them to do something, you know, they'd be willing to oblige you. And I was very lucky that the landlord of the place said that I could use it. Just like really, I mean, it was a huge favor, you know, and it was great. But I mean, you could set up indoor soccer in there. Yeah. It's just massive. It's ridiculous. And I just have this one desk in this massive space. It was amazing. But I was using it for Carb Digital stuff. So check out carbdigital.com if you're looking
for any web design services.
Although I won't be accepting any new clients from now on, pretty much. So
that advertisement was pointless.
Completely pointless.
Okay.
Yeah. But I was doing some client work and whatever, and I just needed the space, and it's pretty good.
Cool.
Yeah.
Somebody was asking us to talk about the British invasion of the sovereign state of Northern Ireland. I don't think that's an issue we're going to address on this episode, is it?
No, it's too deep.
Maybe we'll do it in the future.
Possibly.
So what are we going to talk about first on today's show?
Politics. Oh, great.
Michael, don't you love politics?
I just love politics. Politics makes the world go round.
That is true. I would agree with that. I'm not sure if you truly believe that.
No, I agree. Well, I agree with it.
I don't know if it does.
I mean, politics has its downsides, but... It's pretty much necessary.
So we're going to talk about the U.S. election. And when we talk about the U.S. election, there's only one way we can start off talking about the U.S. election.
That's correct.
Cue the music. Yep.
Every time.
This gets me so revved
up. It gets you pumped up. I think that was the idea.
Wait for it. Here comes the beat now. 3, 2, 1, go. Yep. U.S. election 2016 coverage on the 99%. So we're going to talk, we talked last episode about the Republicans and all their foolish behavior. This week we're going to talk about the Democrats,
who
are legitimately sensible people in comparison, but you know, they're still American,
deceitful politicians. Basically not as entertaining or as funny.
No. We got our two big front runners. There's four Democrats running for president. We have Lincoln Chafee, who currently has 0% of the polls. And he does all of his, his social media campaign is designed entirely on Microsoft Word using Comic Sans.
Amazing.
But you know, he's a legitimate politician.
Wait, how do I look it up? How do I look him up here?
Lincoln Chafee's Facebook page. And he most recently had something that was designed using, he might have deleted it since, but it was designed using Microsoft Word. And it was Lincoln Chafee, C-H-A-F-E-E. So we've got him. Then we have Michael Malley.
This guy looks top notch.
Michael Malley's also running, and he's from Baltimore, and he was heavily involved in getting marriage equality in Maryland, a lot of equal rights issues for minorities, and, you know, he's not really doing very well in the polls, though. And then we have our two big contenders, and a few months ago, never would I have thought there would be two contenders. We thought it was going to be the Hillary show all the way, but of course, we have Bernie Sanders.
Is he actually a contender now?
He's a real contender. In New Hampshire last week, which is one of the absolute huge swing states, Bernie actually did better in a poll than Hillary did.
Madness,
which is crazy, and is I don't know. So here's the situation. I personally far prefer Bernie to Hillary as a candidate. He agree with his policies more consistently. The issue that people see is they say while he may be getting support among Democrats, he'll never win an election against a Republican. He can't.
No,
not mainstream enough. However, and that's most certainly true. But and Hillary, being realistic, will win the Democratic nomination. But here is a potential situation that could happen. Donald Trump loses the Republican nomination to Jeb Bush or Scott Walker. Donald Trump runs as an independent candidate. So we have three, we have Hillary or Bernie, we have Jeb or Scott, and we have Trump. Trump as an independent, splits the right-wing vote so that the Republican candidate cannot get enough vote to win the presidency, and that the Democrat wins that election. Now, this is a situation that's very likely to happen, and people who discuss the situation assume that the Democrat who will win this in this hypothetical will be Hillary. However, were Bernie to sneak in and win the Democratic nomination, and then a situation were to occur when a Democrat was guaranteed the presidency because of a Trump-Republican nominee split, Bernie could be president. This could happen.
Madness.
Could happen.
We could have a...
And our president would be a socialist, far-left socialist. I would be...
America
would be a happy
could,
day.
It could be in for a big change.
Big change. I mean, Bernie's for absolute healthcare as a human right.
I don't know if much would actually change.
I mean, he'd try his best.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's only so much you can do.
All you can do is you can look at Obama's record. What has Obama achieved? He got healthcare. He got a lot of military intervention shut down. He got not as much as some would have hoped, but he got some. So these are things that the president can do depending on what kind of Congress they're working with over the years. So I don't know. Bernie Sanders could potentially be very good for America. But as I said, it's extremely unlikely he'll win. It seems now that Hillary probably will. I don't know. Hillary probably will be the next president.
We need a woman as the United States president.
If you look at Hillary's... Yeah. I mean, Hillary's better than a Republican, but I question many of her past political decisions. But you know what? We'll be endorsing Hillary here on the 99% if she beats Bernie Sanders in the primaries, which...
As if our endorsement's going to make a big difference.
Yeah. So there's a...
99% says thumbs up to Hillary Clinton.
Yes, exactly. So there's another story this week related to the presidential election. So in these New Hampshire polls this week, there was a poll where Donald Trump and Hillary were basically polled against each other. But there was a third candidate.
Wow.
And a presidential candidate who won 9% of the vote in a North Carolina poll. So he won 9% of the vote up against Hillary and Donald Trump. His name, D's Nuts. D-E-E-Z-N-U-T-S. D's Nuts. D's Nuts is contending against the likes of Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton to become the next U.S. president.
Okay.
And he won almost a tenth of the vote an independent candidate in a public policy polling poll. That is a lot of P's. Public policy.
He's got an unfair advantage here. His name is D's Nuts.
No, it's not. He has been unmasked.
Oh.
As what? Brady Olson, age 15. From Wallingford in Iowa. And yesterday was his high school sophomore orientation.
It's not legal for him to
no.
apply.
He says, I am a 15-year-old who filled out a form, had the campaign catch on fire, and I'm now putting up the best third-party numbers since Ross Perot, he told The Guardian, who confirmed his identity with his parents and has seen his passport. I've told my family and some of my friends for school. They think it's hilarious. These Nuts is among 508... He's among 585 registered candidates, as well
D's
as...
Nuts, though.
Yeah, and as well as his success in North Carolina, he pulled in 8% of votes in Minnesota and 7% in his home state of Iowa. What? In North Carolina, voters were asked, if the candidates for president next year were Democrat Hillary Clinton, Republican Donald Trump, and independent D's Nuts, who would you vote for? Trump came out on top with 40%, Clinton with 36%, and D's Nuts received 9%. He has become the most successful independent in two decades. They have the poll here.
Madness.
Do you have a favorable or unfavorable opinion of D's Nuts?
Favorable, 80, obviously.
81% not sure. So D's Nuts is doing
D's
very
Nuts
well.
Is amazing.
D's Nuts has been endorsed by the likes of, and I quote, by the likes of American actor Anson Mount.
Who?
Yep. And the punk hardcore band by the same name. Called D's Nuts or... Hanson. Brady, the son of a farmer and a dental assistant, told the Daily Beast he realized this was possible when he heard about Limberbutt McCubbins, a cat from Kentucky seeking the Democratic nomination for president. However, D's Nuts does not seem to be taking the campaign seriously, and on his website he reveals his manifesto. He believes that federal officers should have their salary cut in half until the budget is balanced, and that anyone found to be an illegal immigrant must be deported back to their country of origin. Ooh.
This is very debatable.
However, his campaign is unlikely to go any further, in part because presidents must be at least 35 years old.
Shame.
So, D's Nuts.
D's Nuts.
He's not doing very well. Sorry to hear that.
Wait, so Trump is on top?
Yeah, but that's...
Why? Because he's just... Because
if you're stopped in the street by a pollster and they say, who'd you vote for president next year? You're going to say,
Trump.
He's a man. I love him. He's great.
The only thing polls are good for are hitting people in the face.
Exactly. Or crushing people's backs with. I don't know. But Trump, his big scandal since our last episode was that Megyn Kelly, who was the moderator of the debate that we discussed in episode 6, he said Megyn Kelly had blood coming out of her eyes. She had blood coming out of her whatever.
He actually said that.
Yeah, he does not understand the female anatomy and hence should not be president.
Her whatever. Did he actually say that?
He did.
Oh my God.
Michael, do you understand corporation economies?
No.
Click on this next link and you'll find it. You'll understand. So there's this brilliant article.
Panda.com.
It's called Every Economy in the World Explained with Two Cows.
Wow. This sounds amazing.
It's really, really good. It's just all of these pictures of two cows, and it tells you how every economy would deal with these two cows.
Can I read one of these out?
Read a few of them.
Traditional capitalism. You have two cows. You sell one and buy a bull. Your herd multiplies and the economy grows. You sell them and retire on the income. An all-American corporation. You have two cows. You sell one and force the other one to produce the milk of four cows. Later, you hire a consultant to analyze why the cow has died.
A Greek corporation. You have two cows borrowed from French and German banks. You eat both of them. The banks call to collect their milk, but you cannot deliver, so you call the IMF. The IMF loans you two cows. You eat both of them. The banks and the IMF call to collect their cow's milk. You are out getting a haircut. An Indian corporation.
This is brilliant.
You have two cows. You worship them. Okay. The best one by far, though. The best one by far is the Irish corporation. An Irish corporation.
They have an Irish corporation.
You have two cows. One of them is a horse. A Chinese corporation. You have two cows. You have 300 people milking them. You claim that you have full employment at high bovine productivity. You arrest the newsmen who reported the real situation.
Wow. A Swiss corporation. You have 5,000 cows. None of them belong to you. You charge the owners for storing them.
Communism. You have two cows. The state takes both and gives you some milk.
Yep. These are quite accurate.
I mean, they are. Bureaucratism. You have two cows. The state takes both, shoots one, milks the other, and then throws the milk away. Socialism. You have two cows. You give one to your neighbor. Fascism. You have two cows. The state takes both and sells you some milk.
Yep.
So, I mean, you know.
That's amazing. How'd you find that?
I saw it online.
Somewhere.
Somewhere. A secret, undisclosed location.
They were putting out ads on websites you're not proud of.
Well, maybe not. I mean, some of the politics there I wouldn't entirely agree with, but it's witty. It's worth reading if you want a basic understanding of world economies, even one that's biased against the Greek government, maybe. But anyway, briefly address another political situation right now. In the UK, the Labour Party are electing their new leader.
Oh, wow.
There's a crazy situation where people thought it was going to be Andy Burnham or Liz Kendall. Or
I don't really get the
Yvette
UK
Cooper
thing because the Prime Minister isn't there.
Party
leader.
Basically, David Cameron is Prime Minister for the next 5 years.
Yeah.
Unless something terrible were to happen. Labour do not want him to be Prime Minister after that, or any Conservative, because frankly, Conservatives are evil. So, they are trying to elect a leader who will be successful in bringing them to government in 5 years. And the candidates currently are Liz Kendall, Yvette Cooper, Andy Burnham, and Jeremy Corbyn. And Andy Burnham was the assumed frontrunner, I imagine. And, Jeremy Corbyn's become the frontrunner now. And Jeremy Corbyn, I would say, is basically the British equivalent of Bernie Sanders. He is a socialist, although in Britain, of course, when you're a socialist, you're a real socialist. You're not an American socialist. You know, Jeremy Corbyn is a far left, but he's a cool guy. He voted against the Iraq War, and he has a good record with certain issues. There was an amusing article today on the Huffington Post called Reasons Why You Shouldn't Vote for Jeremy Corbyn. And it basically highlights all the reasons why Jeremy Corbyn is such a very nice man. Jeremy Corbyn wears socks with sandals. Jeremy Corbyn has a pack of chewing gum but won't give you any. Jeremy Corbyn once returned a video for Blockbuster without rewinding it. Don't let this man run the Labour Party.
Oh my God, that must have been the most annoying thing for the person after.
Absolutely.
Who had to rewind the entire video.
I mean, imagine.
Before watching it. They sit down, they're
like... What do you think the video was of?
Probably...
Godzilla 1999.
Probably one of David Attenborough's documentaries.
I'd say that's the kind of thing Jeremy Corbyn would rent.
I mean, he's a socks with sandals kind of guy.
Exactly, yeah. That's Jeremy Corbyn's... But I'm voting Yvette because Jeremy Corbyn thought Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace, was the best Star Wars film. We don't want that man running our government. Jeremy Corbyn never replaces the loo roll after he finishes it. Is this the kind of man you want running our party? So, you know, Jeremy Corbyn, you can do your research, but anyway, that article...
They went really in-depth digging up dirt on Jeremy Corbyn.
So down with Jeremy Corbyn.
Indeed.
Michael, what's Alphabet?
Well, Alphabet is quite an interesting thing. Basically, Alphabet is Google and...
They're trying to take over the world.
A number of other companies.
Mm.
So Google has grown and grown and grown to such a huge... You know, you can't just say, this is what Google is. Because while Google's main income is ads, they're an ad company.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they do. They're a web services company. They make money off ads. They have Google X, so they have where they do projects. They have Loon. They have their self-driving cars. They have Fiber. So they have all these different projects that don't make money right now. They're just experiments, really.
Mm.
And they don't have a plan to make money in the future. They're R&D developments.
Yeah.
And the problem is that Google's investors, big investors in Google, are giving out because they just want more of the core business, which is ads and making more revenue and more money. But Google wants to be able to experiment. So what Google did was they made a parent company, what's essentially a parent company, that it takes in Google as part is an Alphabet company now, but so is Fiber, so is Loon, so is self-driving cars. They're all separate companies. And the great thing is they can now have freedom. So Alphabet, all the money is routed through Alphabet.
Yeah.
Now, it's not an accounting trick. It's not something to make more money and to get more tax relief. It's actually literally just to be able to have more freedom and give those R&D projects a better chance of, you know, and to be able to kind of take them a little bit further and do what they want without investors on their backs.
Mm.
But also, it allows more CEOs of companies because everybody wants more CEOs. You know? So you have a CEO of Google. You also have a CEO of Alphabet. You also have a CEO of Fiber. You also have a CEO of Loon. So you have a CEO of all these different companies. And it's not going to affect us.
Does it allow Google to secretly carry out more secret evil plans and, you know, build nuclear missiles and spying software and hidden cameras in all the walls?
And no, it doesn't.
Without being caught by the investors? Like,
No. Well, I mean...
Or the government? Because there must be a reason to do it that would, you know, because it's obviously, it's an effort that they must have a lot of reasons for doing.
I don't think Google are an evil company.
I don't think they began it as an evil company. I think that was the intention of Google, but I think that they've gotten to a point now where there's a point of no return where they've become the face of sort of big brother in society where it's like, we may as well just become this all-seeing eye of corporation.
I don't think that's what Google power. Are. I think that's because they were forced to do it. You see, governments force Google. You see, the reason why Google is seen in that way is because Google collects information.
Yeah.
That's how they make their business.
Mm-hmm.
But they're ethical about it.
Yeah.
There's a big difference between, you see, when you sign up to Google,
yeah,
you're consenting to use their products.
I think the main issue is I don't think the main issue is that people don't realize that. I think the main issue is that there's an ignorance in society, or at least there was till very recently, about the extent to which Google were watching you. And as a result, there's been a backlash. I mean, I know so many people who say, I'll never use Google, I'll never use Gmail. They're evil, they're watching me. And I say, well, that's a cliche, it's a conspiracy theory. I don't think that it's completely untrue, but I don't think, you know, Google are, you know, watching you so that...
I don't think Google are watching...
If Google are watching you, they're only doing it to sell you stuff.
You see, it's not in their... Yeah, exactly. They're not in their interest.
They're not, you know, an evil Russian spy agency from the 1960s.
All Google want to do is make more money.
Yeah.
And they also happen to make really good products.
Mm.
They make... They have the biggest search engine in the world and the second biggest search engine in the world, which is kind of... They have Google and they have YouTube. They make an awesome cloud services application.
Yeah.
They make a fantastic word processor, which I'm using right now.
I'm using Google Docs right now.
You know, they just make great products.
And I guess the scientific, the more kind of physical things that they're now developing, the cars and the...
That's the side of Google I really love.
Yeah.
Is that they could just decide, they could just stop it here, but they have so much money.
Mm-hmm.
They actually want to invest it in good stuff. And I'd rather see them investing in R&D than the military.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, they do good things. They're
developing. At least they have imagination.
Yeah.
It's not just an aim for destruction.
Exactly.
In the words of Mike Huckabee, the role of the military is to kill people and break things. Not to invent, not to inspire, not to dream. And Google, I mean, they're dreaming about millions and billions and trillions of dollars.
Inspirational.
But while they're having that dream, they might accidentally skip into a dream in which they develop something that'll make all of our lives better. Something magical.
So I think that Alphabet is... What Alphabet does is it almost divides, it takes that evil part of Google mm-hmm. and puts it in a separate company.
Yeah.
And then just makes, you know, all these separate companies for all the cool R&D related stuff.
So we can ignore the evil things.
Fun fact about Alphabet, BMW owns Alphabet.com.
Oh.
And Google tried to buy it off them and BMW won't sell it.
What? I wonder how much they offered them for it.
I would say quite a lot of money. Alphabet. Now it's abc.xyz.
That's... I'm going to tell a story now, actually, briefly. Last week, I bought the domain name lucian.ie, and it turns out by doing this, I'd broken a law. You're not allowed to purchase a .ie domain name of just your first name. You can buy... I could have bought lucianwadaily.ie. I could have bought lwadaily. I cannot buy lucian.ie, and I cannot buy lucianwd.ie. So I own lucian.ie right now. I've paid for it. I own it, but I'm not allowed to use it. So it's just there. No one else can buy it, which is good. It hasn't gone back on sale, but I can't redirect it or add hosting. So I was inconvenienced by that somewhat, but anyway.
The .ie thing is so weird because you have to, when you buy your .ie domain, then you have to go and contact some some guys who you have.
Yeah. I contacted them.
Like send
them.
Your passport.
I was willing to do that. I was willing to share that information with them as long as I could use lucian.ie, but apparently that was against the rules and wasn't worth it otherwise to me.
Yeah. So... You didn't get like a refund.
I'm holding on to it for the year because it was €2.
Fair enough.
They had a sale.
Oh, right. Fair enough. Where'd you get it off? Irish Domains?
Register 365.
Oh, Register 365.
They had a one-day sale, so.
Okay.
Okay.
Very interesting content.
We spoke a few weeks ago about the Ashley Madison hack.
We did.
which was, you know...
Which I just hated so much to report on.
And yesterday, the...
More media.
Yesterday, all of the data got leaked online.
All my data. It's out there now in the wild.
So now, but we have a graph of all of the top cities in which people were using this adultery website.
Brilliant.
So, if you would like to know...
I would love to know.
You would like to know what the top cities were.
The number one.
The number
it's
one.
It's loading.
It's loading. The number. Let's try and delay. Okay, the number one city in the world for Ashley Madison accounts.
So okay.
Have a guess.
New York City.
No.
Beijing.
No.
London.
No. With 374,542 accounts.
Washington, D.C.
Sao Paulo. Number two by quite a wide margin with 268.
Oh, wow. That was
quite... New York.
Ah, oh, I was so close.
Then with 265, we have Sydney. And then we have
New York.
Error loading. I legitimately have no... Okay, then we have...
Where are you getting this information from,
this is from the London Independent.
Oh, fair enough.
Then we have Toronto with 222. Then we have Santiago, yeah. Melbourne.
Melbourne Sound!
We ain't bleeping around. We have Melbourne. We have Houston, Los Angeles, London, Chicago, Rio de Janeiro, Madrid, Botoga, Brisbane, Brooklyn, Miami. Brooklyn? Brooklyn's not a city.
No, Brooklyn's New York.
It's
in New York.
Brooklyn, Miami, Calgary, San Antonio, Dallas, Brasilia, San Diego. I'm waiting for Dublin. San Diego,
How far down the list is Dublin?
I don't think Dublin's... No, Dublin's not on
the list.
On
the list.
It only goes to Perth, Vegas, Atlanta, and with 86,000, Philadelphia. So that's our list. Dublin, I think in Galway there are 4,000 users.
That's kind of scary.
That's really scary.
4,000 people looking
Of all the people who live in Galway, if there's 4,000 seems... I think it's 2,000. Of all the people living in Galway, if 2,000 are on Ashley Madison, that means I know a lot of people who are on Ashley Madison. So, just
you know one.
I know one. He's sitting in front of me.
A proud user.
Proud user.
It's so just... It just works so well, you know? It does exactly what you want it to do. The interface is incredible.
It's such a bad website, though. I've looked at it. It's terribly designed. Anyway,
well, the great thing about...
He's typing it in his browser as we speak.
I have a bookmark and everything.
Yeah. It's your homepage.
Married but feeling unfulfilled. I click the ad and everything, so it's going to cost them money.
What's really funny is that their homepage has a security guarantee at the bottom.
Oh, it does look terrible.
But their homepage has a security guarantee in the footer, which is very... I mean, maybe it's
SSL,
gone now.
SSL, secure site.
But I mean, they're not secure. How are they
that secure? That SSL certificate was bought from carbdigital.com.
Oh, was it?
No, it wasn't.
But how is that secure? I mean, that's false advertising. They're not secure. Just,
that's a logo. Logos aren't secure.
Yeah, I guess.
That's just a little thing saying, oh, it's secure.
Yeah,
I think they did change it up a little bit.
I'm sure they did.
Ashley Madison is the world's leading married dating service for discreet encounters. Life is short. Have an affair. AshleyMadison.com. /99%
Yes, we have a special deal.
And that's...
Listeners of the 99% get... You know, a free...
They have an affiliate program. Oh, my God. This is amazing.
The 99% is brought to you by AshleyMadison.com.
Oh, God.
Life's short. Listen to a podcast.
Become an Ashley Madison affiliate today.
This is brilliant. Michael, this
average
is brilliant.
Average affiliate payout, $7,500 per month.
Oh, my God. This is the absolute solution to all of our problems. We'll keep going with the show on a weekly basis. Sponsored by AshleyMadison.com. Life's short. Listen to a podcast.
It was featured on Larry King... Dr. Phil,
all the best TV shows,
Howard Stern, and Ellen.
Ellen,
it's the number one dating service in the world.
Why was it featured on Ellen? She's an ethical person. Why would she? I mean, Howard Stern and
I think she was probably making a joke about it. Yeah, I mean,
Ellen's an ethical person. Anyway,
earn up to $200 per sign. This sounds right up our alleyway. And look at the picture and everything. Look.
I mean, I think you should fill out the form as we record. Like.
Yeah,
I'm going to sign up for that. We'll let you know next week how it goes. Yeah. Maybe we should get some from Ashley Madison on as a guest next week.
Oh my God, for the final episode
that would be
of
great.
The season.
We'll get a special guest next week.
Well, let's go to the interview with Harry McCann.
This is Harry McCann. We never asked him about pizza, you know.
We never asked
Darn.
Him. I wanted to know what pizza Harry McCann
Harry's
liked.
An interesting guy. He's younger
really
than both of us.
Really interesting. He's got a lot to say. Really interesting guy. He's done a lot of stuff.
No introduction necessary.
No introduction
Although
necessary.
Although we introduced him before we talked to him. So
we did.
Let's just play the interview.
All right.
Here we go.
So we're joined today by Harry McCann, a 16-year-old serial entrepreneur, founder of Kid Tech, the Digital Youth Council, and the upcoming Future Hackathon and Conference. I interviewed you, Harry, probably, was it July 2014 we were saying?
Yeah, we reckon it was about a year ago.
Just over a year ago for my previous podcast that I did, the Talks About Tech Weekly podcast. And so it's been a while. So what have you been up to since, Harry?
Yeah, I suppose it's been a year. So the year has been relatively busy. I've got up to a few different projects. As you said, I've been working on a few things that we spoke about previously.
Yeah.
Kid Tech has kind of taken a back seat a bit, and I've been working on the Digital Youth Council, which is, to tell anyone who doesn't know what it is, it's basically give young people a voice in STEM in Ireland. And then really for the last year, I've been in transition year, so the year's kind of been quite free. I've had a lot of time to do stuff that was of interest to me rather than just going to school. So yeah, it's been an interesting year, very busy. Mm-hmm.
So I guess for the listeners who may not be aware of you, I mean, how would you describe yourself? Because you do so many different things. How do you kind of describe yourself to people who don't know you already?
I'm a person who wears many hats, I think is the phrase. I wear many different hats. So
right.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, I have too many hats on at one time. I suppose I do everything and anything involved in the STEM area. I think over the last year, I've been at 50 plus conferences around the country and abroad. I've done a lot in the STEM area. So I think, yeah, I'm what I call a professional geek at this stage. Professional geek and proud, may I add, as well. I think, I think that's how I describe myself, a professional geek who wears many hats.
would you say that the hat that you choose to wear would change from day to day based on your sort of levels of enthusiasm for different areas?
Oh, most definitely. Yeah. I think it's the same for everybody. I think, you know, sometimes you get up and you're like, right, I have so much work to do. And when you look at the list of things you have to do for the day, if you decide that, you know what, I'm not in the mood to deal with a particular kind of person, I'll move on to a different piece of work. And yeah, I suppose the hat changes. I have a wardrobe full of hats and I decide which one I put on in the morning, consider if it's sunny or if it's raining outside or what kind of mood I'm in.
Right. So, Harry, I guess what I want to first of all talk about, do you find it, because you're going to fifth year now?
Fifth year, yeah.
Right. And yet you are like an entrepreneur, you're a public speaker, you're starting this new conference that we'll probably talk about a little bit later on. I mean,
yeah.
I guess we're in an age now where age doesn't really matter, I guess. There's a lot of, there's this kind of whole movement of young people who are, you know, going into entrepreneurship, getting more involved. Like, how do you find that? Do you find it's difficult? Do you think that age is an advantage or a disadvantage to you?
I suppose it's a bit of both. I think you probably find yourself with the body is doing what you do in regards to a podcast. You kind of find it's a bit of both. It matters to people you're with and what you're doing and who you're speaking with or dealing with. I think if you're speaking with some older adults, obviously they question the fact. And, you know, I've often come across people who are very open to the idea of what I do, and I'm sure you do as well. And you often come across the people who are kind of skeptical of the old idea of somebody actually running a business who's still a teenager.
Yeah.
And then I suppose really then it comes to peers, respect from peers. Like, I know I have peers who wouldn't understand what I do and then would really not have much of an interest, and I've peers who do. I think really though it doesn't affect me personally, and I'm sure you probably have the same experiences. If I have an interest in it, I enjoy what I do, it doesn't really matter how other people see me. I try to come across the best way possible when I'm with other people, in the case that I think your first impression is always very important. I think that people remember you for that. So to try and make sure you make a good first impression as possible. And I think you need to make sure you get respect. And I think, you know, and once again, I go back to it, I'm sure you guys are the same, in the case that you want people listening. You want, you know, the case is you want to make sure people respect you and respect what you do, no matter what age you are. But I do think age is only merely a number. It doesn't really mean that because you're 16, you have lack of ability as such.
What I would see from time to time is that, like, if an adult was skeptical about a young person doing something, once that they witness the competence that you're, you know, the competence with which you're doing work, then they'd actually have more enthusiasm for helping you and working with you, because there's just such a shock factor of, wow, if this person this young is able to do this work, then they must be got something going on. Like,
yeah, I suppose, like, and I think we're in a position that, to be honest, and I think there's people like myself and yourselves and many other people are in the position now that we're lucky enough that, because if we do such good work and if we present ourselves in a certain way and the work we do, that people will finally realize and people will take into consideration that, you know, when a 16-year-old walks into a room full of 10 adults who are CEOs and MDs and big C level people, that they're just as capable as other people. And I think that's really something I think is very important. I, you know, the Digital Youth Council is full of 23 young people as such who are aged anywhere between 12 and 17. And I don't have many, you know, there's no rules, there's no regulations really to the council. It's as open as much as possible. But I always try to make sure that the council comes across as not professionally as possible, but also as respectful as possible, so that people know and understand that we're trying to set an example of what young people in Ireland are capable of doing. So I think we kind of have a certain responsibility in that case, because we are the lucky people who have the opportunity to get these amazing chances and go to these amazing places. So I just think, as long as we make sure that we're respectful of that and that we take that with open arms and kind of take advantage of that, then we're in a good position. But I enjoy it. I'm sure you guys agree. I enjoy being the youngest person in the room when we go to a conference. Mm-hmm. I enjoy being able to, you know, represent people my age. I enjoy being able to do something that nobody else probably has done or nobody else is doing at our age. I think it's an enjoyable thing. I think it's exciting as well.
Yeah, definitely. So I guess people want to know, what was young Harry like, you know, as... growing up as a toddler into his childhood years, did you always have that kind of drive for business and interest in technology? You know, where did it come from, I guess?
Well, as a child, I had a really big head, I'd imagine. I think from pictures, I had a really big head. I still do, for anyone who knows me. I've just grown into it a bit. So yeah, that's toddler Harry. Toddler Harry had a big head. I was one of these kids, and I'm sure there's a lot of people the same, who took things apart. And who took things apart, and then I'm sure you guys remember when you take something apart and you leave something around the place and parents pick it up and they go, oh my God, what did he take apart this time? And what did he plug into the wall, or what did he do? And yeah, I was that kind of child. I think I was a Lego child, so I was quite curious in regards to making things and building things. So I think that kind of stuck with me. I think, although I mightn't have been an entrepreneur, I was always kind of interested in the whole selling and buying things to people. But I think the whole idea of, you know, building things and creating things makes you kind of think differently as such, and makes you kind of want to explore different ideas and not just accept the norm, but kind of explore different options and explore different fields. So yeah, toddler Harry had a really big head and liked taking things apart. So
yeah, like I kind of would be similar to you in, like, I always loved making things and all that. But what I found was, because I have my own business and things, what I found was in order to kind of take my interests a step further, I had to become kind of an entrepreneur, or, you know, set up my own business so that I have the freedom to do that myself. And I think that's, I don't know if you found that yourself, how you got into entrepreneurship, but that's how I kind of got into it, was I wanted to be able to control and have the freedom to do what I like.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I think, you know, there's a difference being able to, and I always look at it, there's a difference between being a techie and being an entrepreneur, or being a tech entrepreneur. I think there's a big difference between that. So the idea is, although I was a techie to begin with, I think I'm more of a business person now, if anything. I think, you know, everyone's the same, as you said, you know, you have to be able to control and be able to look at a business perspective of everything you do, whether you're building websites, whether you're building apps, whether you're even making a podcast. And I think you come back, like, the podcast, you don't necessarily just come on air and decide to start talking, record it and put it out. There's a business aspect to that. There's a business aspect to anything. And I think that's where you come. I think, you know, you're going in the right direction when you realize that there's more to something than just building something or making something. There's an actual idea of commercializing and putting it out there. And I think that's what happened to me over the last 2 years. You know, I'm in this, I'd say, 2 years now in November. And I went from being a tech geek to a geek with a bit of interest in business, to a business, to a STEM entrepreneur, I'd always say, and kind of an interest in everything. But yeah, I think you kind of have to grow. And I think that's the next step forward for anybody interested in STEM who really wants to make an app or really wants to build a website. They need to get those business brains as well.
Right. So Kid Tech was your first business, I guess, right?
Yeah, it was my baby.
Right. And what was the idea when you were going to create Kid Tech? What was kind of the idea behind it? What did you want to do with Kid Tech?
Very simply, I wanted to teach the next generation tech, which was really big aim as such.
Okay.
Because the next generation is a few 100,000 or even million people. So mm-hmm. It wasn't necessarily the most achievable objective. But that was the aim. I think, yeah, there was to teach the next generation tech. It was very uh-huh. simple. It was something I set out from day one as such.
And are you still continuing with Kid Tech, or are you kind of more focusing now on your newer ventures?
Yeah, I think, you see, I kind of moved from that area. I think the idea was eventually Kid Tech is something that I've always will do. And, you know, I really probably would pick up eventually. I'm not day to day. It's not my area of things. It's something that I'm very thankful I've done because it's opened so many doors for me. I don't even think I believe it sometimes. But it was definitely probably the start off. And I think it was probably the biggest learning curve for me was the case of doing Kid Tech. Although I don't do it now, as I said, I'm always open to doing it in the future. But really, at the moment, I'm concentrating on other things that I think have more potential and more hope of going that bit further.
When you started Kid Tech, which is such a, you know, an ambitious core idea, what is really the essential idea? Why do you think that it's important to teach technology to the next generation? And why would you take that responsibility yourself?
Well, I think, like, we look at the moment, and I look at Dublin as such, and I look at Dublin mainly, and then, you know, at the moment, Galway and Cork are moving in the same direction. But you look at Dublin, and you look in the case that we look at Facebook, we look at Google, we look at LinkedIn, we look at Twitter, and they all have their EMEA headquarters in here. So for Europe, Middle East, and Asia, which is huge. It's a really big thing. Mm. And, you know, these companies are all employing hundreds and hundreds of people. And they're actually employing people quicker than there's graduates coming out. So my point was, there's going to be so many tech jobs in the future, and there's going to be so many STEM jobs in the future, that we're just not teaching kids what the necessary skills to be able to work in this. So I felt that really we need to be teaching the next generation tech. So when it comes to their time in college, when they go and, let's say, do computer science and they come out, that there's enough people being supplied to these companies. So these companies stay in Ireland. We don't want Facebook moving out of Ireland because there's simply not enough computer science graduates coming out. And that was the idea. I don't want Ireland losing business because we can't supply. And the problem is then, if we can't supply and Facebook doesn't want to move, they're literally getting graduates from all around the world to come to Ireland and to work in these positions. So they're filling Irish positions, basically. So I think that was the main idea behind it, was to teach next generation tech so that we could fill these jobs and that we can make Ireland the Silicon Island as such of Europe.
Right. So I guess you're actually setting up a conference, the future conference in 2016. That sounds huge. That sounds like an incredible kind of thing to take on. What made you feel that you should go and actually organize a conference?
Well, to be honest, I was approached. So the great thing about the position I've been in the last few years, I get a lot of people coming up to me and asking about ideas and my opinion on them.
Right.
And I got approached by a young guy in Belfast in Northern Ireland, and his name's Adam Flanagan, and Adam had an idea for a conference, and he had loads of these different things, but he was kind of wondering how the best way to go about it and all these different things. So I was like, sure, I'll help you do it and I'll help you get involved. So we've been working away in it for the last few weeks and months now, picking speakers. And really it was that, I'm always a sucker for a good idea and getting involved in a really good idea. And, you know, it's always about exploring different things. You know, I've done the non-profit, I've done the business. Why not just move on to a big tech conference of 250 people? You might as well, I thought. So yeah, it's going to be exciting. definitely think it's something that is a lot of work and has been a lot of work. And in fairness, it's not myself, as I said, it's Adam who's done an awful lot of work. So it's but it's moving quickly. 2016 is closer than I think, unfortunately. So we have to move quicker.
So what's the conference is called Future.
Yeah.
What's the conference going to mainly be about?
What's then? The unique selling point?
Yeah.
The unique selling point. Okay, so it's my Dragon Den pitch, basically. Right.
All
right,
hit us with it.
Right, okay. So basically, Future is an event that they're going to have 250 attendees. It's the only event that I know of, if you can tell me anything different, that's organized by a 14 and a 16-year-old.
Yeah.
The event will last 36 hours. We have 5 speakers confirmed so far, and we've got some pretty exciting speakers, which I'll come back to in a minute. There'll be 12 speakers in total, and the attendees will all be aged 13 to 18. So the way I'm thinking about it is, and it's the way I'll always say, it's the Web Summit for young people. It will be a really cool event. It's in a really cool location as well. Belfast is up and coming. It's a really cool area. It's in a place called T13 in Belfast, so it's going to be really cool. The speakers, as I said, I'll tell you the speakers now. I'll just grab them. Cool speakers. It's going to be an interesting event. I always think the best thing about it is it's organized for young people, for young people. It's organized by young people, for young people. So I think that's something interesting, because an awful lot of events are held for young people or older people, and you really don't know what your audience wants. Yeah. Whereas we've got speakers who are more like, we have a 15-year-old speaker, 16-year-old speaker, 18-year-old speaker. Then we've got some industry experts. And most importantly, which is a big thing at the moment, is we have 6 female and 6 male speakers as well, which is huge at the moment in STEM. So yeah, it's going to be exciting. As I said, it's early days still. We've been working on it a few weeks. But in the next coming weeks, hopefully, we'll have a lot more confirmed. And hopefully, we won't be selling tickets as expensive as Web Summit, thankfully. But yeah, it'll be an exciting event, hopefully.
Well, I'm definitely hoping to be going. It's in January, right?
It's in February. I think.
Okay.
Let me just double check that for you. I think it's February. It is indeed. It's the 12th and 13th of February.
Perfect.
To be honest, as I said, I can't even remember the dates off my top of the head, but it is. It's the 12th and 13th. I need to remember to take time to go up to Belfast.
I'm definitely looking forward to it. So Digital Youth Council then. That was...
Yeah.
So you set that up last year, was it? I think... This time last year was the first meeting.
Well, funny enough, when I met you in May, Dublin Castle, I met you on the Saturday, so that would have been the 23rd. And really, the Digital Youth Council birthday is on the 22nd of May. So the day before I met you was kind of the light bulb moment, if you want to. So that's its official birthday. We had our first birthday in May. There, so it's been a year old. I think it's a year and a bit now. Our baby's getting bigger, but yeah, the first meeting was held in August. It was, I think, it was August the 25th, so it was 4 days' time. So it was 361 days ago.
Wow. So I mean, what's happened with the Digital Youth Council since this time last year?
Yeah, so we've a few exciting bits and pieces happening. So the council just got new members. So the great thing about the council is it's all young people. Mm-hmm. So they're all growing up and they're all going off to do their own different things. So we have a few people who are leaving certain junior cert.
Yeah.
So they've taken a step back, obviously. Mm. And we've introduced some really cool, exciting members, I think, that are a good mix. Once again, something I'm really conscious about is getting a good gender mix. So we've equal guys and equal girls. We have a group of 14, so we have 7 guys and 7 girls. Then also we have some younger kids as well this time. So we have 12. I think the youngest girl, or the youngest person we have, is a girl of 12, who's Neve. And to be honest, Neve is somebody worth mentioning, just as somebody you find amazing now. But Neve, when she was, I think it was last year, invented an app to find the nearest electric car charger to you and its availability. So if you're driving your electric car and you want to go charge it somewhere, she'll find the nearest one to you on an app and whether it's being used or not. Mm. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And they're the kind of people we have on the council. You know, they're a really cool group. And also then we've been working with people like Twitter. We've been working with big people like that, like Google, Twitter.
Yeah.
We've been working with government to kind of make a change. So it's really anything at all to do with young people in STEM. So whether it's the new junior cert curriculum, whether it's the coding in the junior cert curriculum or whether it's privacy on social media, whatever it may be, we're kind of working really hard in that area.
Okay, very good. I think kind of education in general, especially second level education, is kind of reaching a huge kind of turning point at the moment.
Yeah.
We're seeing, I mean, I think personally that the Irish education system is quite outdated, but I think the government are trying their best to bring in technology and start incorporating it and make it and change it and kind of update it and modernize it. Do you think it's a good thing that we're kind of introducing beginning to introduce technology now into our education system?
Yes, I do. I think it's a bit late, I think, at the moment.
Yeah,
I think
definitely.
Late, as in, like, it's too late for it to happen, but I think it should have been done earlier. You know, technology is constantly changing, and it's something that will be really interesting to see in a few years' time, how it advances and how it changes our lives. And I think the main places it can change, and somewhere with that, as you said, we're looking at is education.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just such an interesting subject, and I think it's something that once we introduce into education, it'll make education more exciting. You know, it's something that we really need to be concentrating on, because education is such an important part of our everyday life, and especially young people as well. You know, the generation coming up, you know, myself and yourselves are probably just coming to the end of our schooling life, but there's still people below us who are going to be coming up, and I think if they have a better education than we did, that involves technology, that involves science, that involves engineering and maths, then I think we will have a really exciting generation ahead that will be doing new things, creating new things. And I don't think things like flying cars and things like the driverless cars will be something that will be miles into the future. I think it will be something that we'll be looking at in a few years' time, and very soon.
Is there any area currently that there's a lot of focus on in the sort of second level education system that you think isn't as important as technology, or do you think the technology should somewhat take the place of?
That's a tough one. There's a lot of things there I don't think need as much time as they get. I always still like it. Religion's an important part of the education system. I always think it's something, though, when it comes to secondary school, it doesn't need to be taught. I think religion should be an option in the case that if you want to practice your religion or learn about your religion, then you go do so in a church or a mosque or whatever religion you may be. I think that's something technology could definitely take place of. I think, to be honest, if we're still concentrating on religion in schools, I just don't know. I just don't think it's very beneficial. But that's my personal opinion. Mm. And a lot of people, I can guarantee a lot of people will disagree on that one. Mm-hmm. But it's to be honest, I think education doesn't even need to be its own course. There's IT there, so obviously you could improve the IT course. But I think we need to introduce technology into the classroom to find a more efficient way of learning and an efficient way of researching things and, you know, educating ourselves.
Something we must talk about is that you are this week the proprietor of the @Ireland Twitter handle.
Woo.
And I'm sure this is very, you know, you've got 33,000 followers, or 33,500 followers. And do you have any, how much longer do you have the handle for?
I have it for how much longer? I have it till Sunday. It's a lot of work, though. It's not fun.
And what are you trying to, what message do you plan to spread to the people of Ireland before this is snatched away from you?
First of all, that I want to be the new dictator. Obviously, I want to rule Ireland someday.
Yep.
And so I'm just trying to, you know yourself.
Everybody secretly wants to be a dictator.
Of course we do. We all grew up wanting to be a dictator. But, it's just trying to find a general idea of what the people of Ireland are thinking and how the way is going. Like, you know, what I've done is really I haven't opened it up for much discussion. I've kind of let people let it take its own course. So what I've done is every kind of day I pose a question or I post a subject or I post a kind of objective for the day. So the other day I asked everyone to tweet their best pictures of Ireland. And now that was a bit of a mad day because there was 300 tweets with 300 photos sent to me that day in the space of a few hours. So I had seen some of them most. by pitching their startup in 140 characters, and basically I retweet it to my audience of 31,500.
So one of the, sorry, let me interrupt you. One of the startups that was tweeted to you was a man with a pie shop where all pies cost €3.14. And I was quite amused by this joke. I'm not sure if you picked up on it or not. So I think you should reappraise this man's message. Because
I did actually understand it, and to be honest, I wasn't even sure, was he serious?
It's a great business idea, though. Actually,
it is
brilliant business idea.
Pi equals 3.14. I mean, you put it up on a sign, and you'll get a lot of attention as a pie shop. I think that man is. I think that man is our next billionaire.
Well, look. To be honest, I was looking at it and I've had a few silly comments and a few silly remarks.
Yeah, sure.
I was trying to figure out whether he was serious or not. And I was like, if it is, it's a really good business idea. And I was like, if this is, like, you can give me more information, I'm more than happy to retweet it. And then somebody was like, did you not get the maths thing? And I was like, obviously I got the maths thing, but it's the case that, was he actually serious or not? So obviously he wasn't, but I couldn't really retweet it in that context. But yes, in fairness to him, I give him much, much credit. I've had a few silly comments, I must admit. There was one of my personal favorites was somebody about going into Paddy Powers and putting a bet on of some sort. And then somebody asked me to come do karate in their garage or their basement, which was slightly creepy. You get all kinds of people. I think that's the best thing about it is you're getting to see really cool people do some really cool things.
That's what happens when you're the internet face of a country like Ireland for a whole week.
Yeah, it's weird being the face of a country on the internet. I don't know about you guys, but I've never been the face of anything, never mind a freaking country. it's a bit of a strange thing. But look, it's exciting, and I'd recommend anybody does it, to be honest, just to kind of interact with a bit of bigger audience. You know, we don't all have 31,500 followers. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't anyway. I don't know if you guys do, but... yeah, it's an exciting experience. It's interesting. We'll put it that way.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Well, I think, Harry, it's been great to talk to you.
Pleasure as always.
Yeah, definitely. We had a really great conversation. Where can people find you on the internet?
Apart from at Ireland.
Apart from at Ireland this week until Sunday. Best of luck with your...
final
2 days of at Ireland. But
yeah. Where can you find me? Well, there's loads of different ways you can find me. The FBI's most wanted site.
Yep.
No, not anymore. That was sorted out. So you can find me at, usually on Twitter, it's at the Harry MCC, which is really confusing. Or you could, the Digital You Council website is probably the best way. There's usually the easiest way to get in touch with me. So that's www.digitalyoucouncil.com. And then, you know yourself, Facebook, MySpace, whatever you want it. I'm on most of them anyway, but I'm always interested in hearing, especially if there's anyone out there who's doing something cool or exciting. You know, yourself, you always want to hear about those people who are changing the world. So if there is anyone, feel free to get in touch.
All right, Harry, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you for having
me. Best of luck. Okay, bye now.
Bye.
Thanks again to Harry McCann for doing that interview. He's a very interesting guy, and you can find out all about him by visiting his various internet places.
Indeed. Thanks, Harry.
Good luck with the convention. So, the D23 Expo was on last weekend. I bet you were really up on the D23 Expo.
No.
I dedicated my Friday and Saturday night to the D23 Expo, and
I thought there'd be a lot more haters of the D23 Expo than there actually were.
Why? Haters of the D23 Expo?
Because they took the whole thing out of Comic-Con.
Yes, but they didn't because it was lame and nothing big happened, really. Okay, so the biggest story of the D23 Expo for me, Friday morning, somebody goes into the D23 hall. There are posters for new Disney films lining the walls. On wall on the right, there is a lineup of Disney Pixar upcoming releases. There are posters for The Good Dinosaur, for Finding Dory, for Coco, and there is also a poster. There is also this poster just there by itself. This poster. Okay?
Oh my God.
So I was scrolling on the internet. I go on hypebeable.com.
Let me describe this for the audio listeners.
Just describe it.
There is a Disney logo on the top, a Pixar logo on the top, and then there's an eye split down the middle. That makes it look like two.
Yep.
And it says coming soon on the bottom, and it has a glowing red.
Yeah.
With like an emblem.
You know what this means, don't you?
I do know.
Exactly. I saw this on the website, and I'm going to just be honest. I cried.
You were in tears.
I cried when I saw it.
It's very emotional for
just,
you.
When I was seven years old, I drew this logo like on my desk. Like I had a wooden desk in my room, and the logo for the Incredibles 2004 Brad Bird film. I drew this logo everywhere. I always drew Disney Presents a Pixar film, The Incredibles. I drew the logo. And now this is actually a reality that's actually been designed by a graphic designer that the studio have put up in a frame at their expo. And like, I don't really care. I don't even care about the film. The film will probably disappoint me, as all sequels do.
That's the problem, but is this, when you make something so great, it's so hard to continue that.
But this is just, this alone just made me so happy. It's beautiful. It is my childhood dream come to life. And really, The Incredibles 2 is something that I've been waiting for the majority of my life. And this poster is just amazing. So that was the D23 Expo already succeeded in making dreams come true for me.
That's it. Done.
You know, we thought there was a Pixar panel that night. I thought they'd be announcing The Incredibles 2, a release date or something. Nothing happened. There was no mention of the film. There was some Toy Story 4 stuff, some other films. Then on Saturday night, there was a live action panel where Star Wars new poster got released. It wasn't particularly interesting. Some details about Star Wars, some stuff to do with Marvel. Nothing big. But The Incredibles 2 poster, that was enough for me. That was great. Mm-hmm. Last weekend in the box office, Straight Outta Compton made a lot of money, made $60 million.
Straight Outta Compton.
Here's what's interesting about Straight Outta Compton. Recently, there's been a couple of cinema shootings in America. There, of course, the original one was James Holmes back in 2012. Since we recorded our last episode, I must mention James Holmes has actually been given a life sentence in prison.
Yeah.
He's not gotten the death sentence, as we suspected he would on episode 3.
Yes.
Yeah, episode 3 we said he might, and he didn't. He got life in prison, so... make of that what you will. But there's been a number of cinema shootings in the last 2 months, and as a result, Straight Outta Compton screenings this past weekend had extra security in cinemas around America. People feared that there was going to be some gang activity, that there was going to be heightened tensions because of the film's subject matter. But there was not a single incident. And frankly, all the cinema shootings that have happened have all been by white men, not African Americans. So... that says a lot about the assumptions people make in the American law area.
It got very high ratings.
It did. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
What's your hot new track this week?
Well,
I've never heard of this artist before.
Let's just play the track. I think this track
speaks for itself.
Let's give it a play.
Celestial star, illuminate the earth.
Wait, is that it?
That's it.
That's your hot new track?
That's my hot new track.
You actually picked that as your hot new track?
I actually did.
That's the worst thing I've ever heard. Who is that guy? He can't even sing.
I know, it's pretty bad.
That's the worst song I've ever heard in my entire life.
It's terrible.
What's wrong with you? It's not even a song. It's 9 seconds.
Being honest, I just went up on SoundCloud and just picked this random song because.
What's it called?
It's called Celestial Star. Celestial Star.
Well, it's what it's called. It's horrible.
It's pretty.
I never want to hear it again.
It's pretty. It's. I mean, how long is it? Like 15, 20 seconds?
I think 11, 12 seconds.
17 seconds.
Oh, right. That's longer than I thought. Well, that's the end of the hot new track. We're never doing it again. You've ruined it. You've killed hot new track.
Next week, I'll be back with an actual hot new track.
All right. If I allow it.
If you allow it. Because, I mean, last week you just like completely hijacked my hot new track?
Last week I hijacked it and I picked that awful...
Or 2 weeks ago now.
That
song
2 weeks ago. I'm going to quiz you a bit now for a minute, Michael.
Okay.
This loads.
I love these quizzes.
It's a quiz called... Forrest Trump or Donald Gump or something.
Forrest Trump, yeah.
Forrest Trump, I think.
Yeah, it's Forrest Trump.
Do you have the quiz?
No, I don't have it up.
Okay.
Would you want me to bring it up?
No, I'll quiz you on it.
Okay, because you told me not to open it.
I told you not to open it.
So I strictly obeyed your rules.
You're very good. You're very kind. We'll wait for it to load now.
There's been a lot of waiting around.
Yeah, there has been.
Elevator music. We need an elevator button just to...
That's a great idea.
There's actually... Okay, I'm going to load a load of elevator music for next week.
You should.
Really, like, top-notch elevator music.
I can't actually get these questions to load. Maybe you should... you should quiz me, actually. I don't know the answers, so you quiz me.
All right. I don't even know what this quiz is. No, I want you to quiz me.
We switch seats?
Okay, let's switch seats.
Don't edit this out.
I'm in Lucien's seat. Oh, this is different. This is a different perspective here.
All right.
Everything sounds so different on this side of the table.
It sounds really different.
Yeah. The headphones are different and everything.
So it's who said it, Donald Trump or Forrest Gump? This is a quiz.
All right.
Okay, wait, I want to play some... I want to see...
You have to turn up the volume on the...
I want to see what his jingle thing does. Oh, that's terrible.
You're just messing with my...
All right, here we go. Who said this? We need global warming. Trump or Gump?
Gump.
We'll say Gump. Nope, Trump.
I knew it.
Who said he's a war hero because he was captured? I like people that weren't captured. I know who said this, actually.
Gump.
Trump.
I don't know.
Trump said that about Senator John McCain.
Okay, there you go.
Who said, somebody's doing the raping?
That's obviously Gump.
Who?
Gump.
Gump?
Trump.
Who do you think said that, Forrest Gump or Donald Trump? One is a fictional character with an intellectual disability. One is a man running for president of the United States. Who said, somebody's doing the raping?
Trump.
Okay. Correct.
They're all just Trump, aren't they?
Who said, I have a great relationship with the blacks?
That's definitely Trump.
Correct. Who said, I don't like the crying?
That's Gump.
Wrong. Trump.
Trump? They're all Trump.
Who said?
They're all Trump.
Who said, in life, you have to rely on the past, and that's called history.
Gump. Don't tell
me
it's Trump.
No, Trump.
They're all Trump. They're all Trump.
Who said, I get along with the middle class and the poor people
better
than I get along with the rich people?
Trump, Trump.
Correct.
Trump.
Who said, let me tell you, I'm a really smart guy?
Trump.
Correct. Who said, I would say he's incompetent, but I don't want to do that because it's not nice?
Trump.
Correct.
I don't even have to think about this anymore.
You got 5.
And they're all Trump. I think the point they're trying to make is some of them could be... Oh my god. I think...
Yes, this is the 99%. Thank you for listening.
Get off my dad. Get off my side. Oh, my god.
That actually sounded really cool when they were all playing.
Leave that
in.
Yeah.
Everything's back to normal now.
Well, that was kind of interesting, except I guess the point they were trying to make was that
Donald
they could
Trump
be
is,
Gump.
You could be Gump.
They actually could be.
But everyone was accompanied by a picture of Gump, which is what kind of threw me off course. I think that was the whole point of the quiz, really, was it was kind of a joke about how... Yeah, that was I'm disappointed in you, HuffPost. You fooled me. Won't give you fool me once. Shame on you.
You fool me twice. Shame on me.
You fool me. Won't get fooled again. Final one last thing that we have to deal with today on the show, as part of our usual low stakes serial local.
Wait, what about
investigation?
Nick.
Who's Nick?
Nick Cage, man.
Nicholas Cage from of the week.
Yeah.
Featuring Bill Murray as the president.
Featuring Bill Murray. As the president.
Hit the jingle.
Nicholas Cage, film of the week.
The week. Nicholas Cage, film of the week, featuring Bill Murray as the president. This week is the first part of a two-part special edition for our final two episodes of season one. This week and next week, I'm going to be covering two Nicholas Cage films, which are a very important part of my life. They're very dear to my heart. I've loved them. They're two of my favorite films of all time. And they are National Treasure and National Treasure, Book of Secrets. So this week we're going to start with the original National Treasure, released in 2004, directed by John Turteltaub, produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, producer of Gone 60 Seconds and the Pirates of the Caribbean films. It's a wonderful film. Oh, yeah. Have you seen National Treasure?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I adore National Treasure. Yeah. I am the biggest fan of National Treasure currently living in this earth.
Definitely.
I've seen it.
What is it that you
25, 26 times.
What is it that you love so much about National Treasure?
So this is how I feel about National Treasure. It is a conglomerate of all my favorite things about the movies, right?
Okay.
It has this sort of Hitchcock suspense, mystery, chase, adventure, man on the run element to it. It has this Da Vinci Code sort of solving clues and running around, and there's history involved, and there's all these historical figures and codes and clues and icons and locations. Then it has this political aspect where it's about American political history, about the founding fathers, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, all these things that happened when the American state was founded. I love the foundation of the American state. I love that kind of thing. And it has Nicolas Cage as an action hero, which is amazing. It has Diane Kruger, who is a wonderful actress. It has Harvey Keitel, who's like one of the greatest character actors of all time, and he's playing the sort of CIA chief head honcho who Nicolas Cage's character Ben Gates deals with. It's just so much fun, and I love it so much. The first film is, I love these two films equally. I'd say the first is probably a superior film, even though the villain in it is Sean Bean, who's quite boring as a villain, and the second one has Ed Harris, who's a better villain, but they're basically the same film. The first one is set in DC and in Philadelphia. Mm. The second goes to Europe. It's in London and Paris. So the second one has better locations, and it's somewhat of a more enjoyable watch for that reason. But really, I don't know. They're both equally good films. I cannot recommend the first National Treasure enough. No one loves it as much as I do, and clearly I have a lot of different reasons. I originally watched it on Christmas Eve, and it was just like most fun I've ever had watching a film in my life. I loved National Treasure so much. But Justin Barth is in it. John Voight's in it. Great film.
Cool.
So next week we'll cover Book of Secrets.
Awesome. I always wanted to know what you loved so much about.
And you're still waiting.
No, I mean, I kind of get it now.
It's just, like, there's no logic behind it, really. I don't know.
You just like it.
I just like it a lot. It's great.
Most of the films that you love are not really
great films. I mean, a lot of the films I mean, Cat in the Hat is a trash film, but I love it
exactly.
Because it's really witty. Like, it's a witty script, but it's... I'll tell the listeners a secret. I sent an invitation to the screenwriter of The Cat in the Hat to come on this week's show.
What?
His name's Alec Berg. He's a showrunner on Silicon Valley.
Oh.
And I asked him to come on. Don't take that as a signal of the quality of Silicon Valley. It's much better than The Cat in the Hat. But I asked him to come on the show, and, he didn't.
Did he reply?
No.
Oh.
He's a very famous man. He's an Emmy nominee this year.
There's no way he was coming on a pleb show like ours.
No.
For the rest of us.
Yeah, like, for the rest of us.
He's not part
see,
of the
he's
rest
part of
us.
He's part of that 1%.
I think most of the people we've been interviewing
are part of the 99%?
Are not.
I mean, well...
Well, it depends on... Well, wealth-wise.
We can take a look back. Who have we had? We've had an up-and-coming new French actor.
We've had a podcaster.
We've had,
they're all very, very interesting people in their own right.
Yes, absolutely. We've had, anti-monarchist protester. You know... These people could be the rest of us.
I think we're just kind of two rest of us kind of guys, just interviewing people who are far more interesting.
Maybe.
I think that's what it is.
I think we're interesting. I think you're interesting.
Yeah. No, I'm not.
I had a low-stakes cereal story, and I'm currently in the process of...
Did you, remove it from the
no,
thing?
No, just the...
Oh, no, it's there.
Yeah, but the link won't work.
Oh, it works for me.
What have you got?
The Rural Bogs.
Oh, you actually have it.
Thieves.
All right, read it out.
This is our update.
Well, it's not an update. It's a new story.
New story.
New low-stakes cereal.
Thieves steal turf from rural Galway bogs. Criminal gangs are stealing turf from isolated bogs across Galway, smashing a thrust that has existed in rural areas through the generations. And while the value of these thefts doesn't compare to that of stolen farm machinery or even domestic oil. It is the breaking of that community bond that has devastated owners more than anything else. Local farm leaders believe that the organized gangs are from outside the country. But who would be interested in turf?
Stealing turf.
But the IFA county chairman, Pat Murphy, put it, they clearly had their homework done. The most recent report in theft occurred last week from the privately owned Fir Tagar bog in the Castle Grove area of North Galway. Tire tracks at the scene reveal the vehicle used to transport stolen goods got stuck in the mud, literally, whilst culprits attempted to get away. Farmers assert the vehicle would have been towed or alternatively pushed out, which would require a high level of manpower.
Oh.
These people were organized thieves. They knew what they were doing. They had a plan. And the chances are they will strike again.
Really?
I'm not actually directly quoting right now, but okay. From the article. Their actions created even more work for the farmer and the victim of the crime, who then had to hoe and level the earth following the incident. This is shocking.
Absolutely.
The second incident happened last week between Friday evening and noon on Saturday, when a neighbor of the first farmer, who previously joked, "Your turf must be better, they didn't touch mine," only to return to his bog to find his turf also snatched.
Oh my God.
This is horrible.
This is disgusting.
In both cases, a car trailer of turf was estimated to be taken, but this time thieves learned their lesson. They did not attempt driving in too far on the damp ground the second time around. The landowner believes that they bagged his turf and carried it to a vehicle parked on the boreen leading into the bog. The financial loss to the farmers isn't crippling, but it's the lack of trust and loss of security that they say has caused the biggest upset.
Yeah, sure.
To see the full story...
Whatever, don't advertise these people.
Read the newspaper I read it out of.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exciting stuff. Remember to continue aiding us in our campaign, hashtag no locky the doors. We want to keep all bathroom doors everywhere in the world open.
No locky the turf stacks.
Yes. No steely the turf stacks.
No steely the turf stacks.
Hashtag no locky the doors, hashtag no steely the turf.
Yep.
I think it's about time we wrapped it up.
I think it is. Lucien, thanks so much for... I think this is quite possibly the best episode we've ever done.
Well, that's debatable.
It's not too hard.
Maybe the best of a bad bunch.
Too hard to make the best episode ever.
Yeah. Well, thank you for inviting me out to 99% World Headquarters once again.
You're very welcome.
Next week's episode will probably be recorded from afar, so...
No.
Maybe. We'll see.
All right.
This may be our last time together. We'll see.
It's never going to be our last time together.
No, we'll be back next year with more 99%. But anyway.
Indeed.
You can get in touch with the show. We are on Twitter, 99pshow. We are on Instagram, 99pshow. We are at facebook.com/99pshow. You can get in touch on the website, 99pshow.com. Email 99pshow@gmail.com. We don't have a 99% Snapchat account. No.
No.
Follow us on Periscope.
Actually, follow me on Snapchat, though. Farmer Ninja.
And I am an artiste.
Cool.
And you can follow the show on Periscope as well, just by following us on Twitter, basically.
Lucien is Revolutionary.
Revolutionary on Twitter.
And I'm McAndrew Tweets.
This show
is a...
co-production of BuzzHub Entertainment and Carb Digital. Carb Digital is a great site, but they're not accepting any more clients from now on, so...
That is true. I'm sorry. BuzzHub is the best place to go for all of your movie and TV show news. Mm. If you're looking for the review of some new movies, such as
Time Out of Mind, film of the week, new film with Richard Gere called Time Out of Mind. 4.5 stars. It's a brilliant film.
Wow.
Richard Gere, best performance ever.
Wow. That's some statement right there.
It's a beautiful film.
Go and read the review. Read the review. BuzzHub.info.
And I have a new website called lucianwd.eu.
Do you?
I do. LucianWD.eu.
That's your one.
It's my new portfolio site with all of my different work. You can find out my podcasting work, my design, photography, filmmaking. The EU. I couldn't get the .ie, so I went for the EU. LucianWD.eu.
It's quite a
I should have got Carb Digital fascinating to design website. It, but
I wouldn't have done it. Or Carb Digital wouldn't have done it.
I would have had to charge Carb Digital would have charged me a fortune. I got that done for free. So.
Oh, film. Lucian has been involved in multiple film productions, podcasting. He currently co-hosts the 99% podcast with Michael McAndrew of Carb Digital Design. Lucian is experienced with the design of magazine covers.
Look at my design page and see what you think of the stuff on it. All right. It's a pretty terrible design page.
It's beautiful. It's got Jesus and a spider and Killian Byrne. And wait, that's it.
There's a gallery down the bottom with lots of...
It doesn't work.
Oh, it should work.
It's bad design, Lucien. It doesn't work.
Yeah, okay.
It's just a gray box.
All right, well, it should work.
Fix it.
Whatever. I'll fix it.
Fix it.
So we'll be back next week with another episode of the 99% season finale.
Absolutely. Let's cue the music.
Cue the music. Thank you all for tuning in. It's been a lot of fun doing this episode again. Thanks to Harry McCann. Thanks to Michael.
No problem. Thanks to Lucien.
Thanks to all of our viewers on Periscope who've been sending in questions that we've been ignoring for the last hour. That's not true.
We will answer them after the show. We have to go. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.
Michael, go with your outro.
No.
Adios, amigos. Next week it's the final episode of the season, so you're going to have to say it.
Never. Yeah.